Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute. Today, we are joined by Hoban Law Group international attorney Luis Armendariz and founder and director of Cannabis Salud, Lorena Beltran, to discuss a new development in the Mexico cannabis industry. And so I will pass this over to you, Mr. Bob Hoban, to kind of set the table here for this discussion on this this advancement in medical cannabis reform that we saw yesterday, January 12th.
Sure. This is an exciting day. It's a heck of a way to start the 2021 calendar year. It's the first of several changes that will happen with our neighbors to the south in Mexico. And this one is something that is different. And I want to make that clear for our listeners. This is a different topic, although it's related to what we've been talking about a lot, and that is this Supreme Court mandate for the adult use or non-medical uses of the cannabis plant. That is something that for now remains on track, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But this is something that has come from a 3 year plus old Mexican piece of legislation that legalizes medical cannabis, at which point the Supreme Court once again was in a position to direct the Mexican legislature to come out with rules and regulations and concerning the implementation of the medical marijuana program. And that's what they did this week. So I wouldn't say it was a surprise that it came. Perhaps that's the timing of it was a little bit of a surprise, but it's great against the backdrop of the fact that beginning on February 1, the lower chamber of deputies in Mexico City will begin to consider much more deeply and pick up where they left off on this adult use or non-medical uses of the plant. So, Lorena, I'd love to start with you and just let's talk about the timing of this for a minute. What is this? Was this anticipated at this point of the year, or was it just a matter of when the regulations were drafted and ready to be presented, they'd be published and presented?
Yes, thank you, Bob. Thanks for the invitation. As you are mentioning, we were actually expecting this regulation to be published no later than January 12th, because that was the last deadline. The COFEPRIS and the Health Ministry had to publish this regulation. It was established by the Supreme Court. They've asked for time to really discuss the regulation and make some modifications, and definitely January 12th was the deadline. As you already know, and people already know, that sometimes they keep asking for more time, and there was the chance that they could have asked for more time, but finally they comply with that last deadline, and we do have a regulation published. We knew how the regulation was going to look like because we saw the draft of this regulation when there was published for the public consultation for everybody, to review it and to make comments and observations. So at the end, they didn't modify much. So we knew how this was going to look like. And what we can see is that it's pretty restrictive just for the pharmaceutical industry mainly. But definitely, we do celebrate this achievement and this regulation, because it just opens the door to continue, the work that we have been doing, but to no stop. We're not going to stop here. We know it's amazing that we're going to be able to do research now, cultivation and just research in general, which is a priority in the cannabis industry. But we also know that we still need to modify certain things in the general health law in order to allow supplements and cosmetics and other things that are restricted right now.
No, it's very well said. So the The timing of this is in fact, and was expected, and there haven't been any major changes. But Luis, let's talk a little bit about some of the main features here. Maybe give us a quick summary and rundown of, you know, what are the type of licensure that this contemplates, and where is that authority situated?
Sure. Thank you for the invite, Bob and Lorena. Happy to be here again. As Lorena pointed out, I think it's a good starting point, along with your clarification that this is strictly limited and destined to be the secondary or derivative rules from the 2017 amendment that only legalize medical use. So as Lorena said, there is no supplements or any other type of like wellness related products, cosmetics, etc. So this falls within the legal framework that applies to the medical development, medicines, pharmaceutical industry. So the interesting part, or the best, I think, the most appealing part is that we are having now a set of rules for the import and export of the plant as raw material, and also as pharmaceutical derivatives or medication. So you are going to have a set of rules that tell you how to, first of all, get your research protocols approved, and then follow the subsequent steps to develop and make new discoveries as to how the plant and the seeds are developed here in Mexico, and ultimately allow for the production of cannabis raw material for pharmaceutical development, for medication. So in very general terms, that's what we're going to have, authorizations and registries for the importation, the cultivation, the export, the sale of medical cannabis. And it also, I think, it does a pretty decent job of also falling among the sanitary legal infrastructure. Interestingly, and I think that the people who drafted the rules do a very decent job in making sure that no government competencies or paperwork filings are duplicated. If we're talking about cultivation, then you have the Secretary of Agriculture with a couple of agencies that are going to have certain authority and oversight over, cultivation, the import of the seed, the registry, the track and traceability requirements. And then if we are talking about just the labeling, the compliance-related issues for, the actual medication, the prescriptions, the medical professionals' compliance aspects, then we have COFEPRIS, the Mexican equivalent of the FDA, and other agencies under the Secretary of Health. So it's an interesting structure. It falls within this general health law. Some other secondary rules that apply to research or to health or medical purposes, products or activities. And it's going to be exciting how just, with this framework, things start to fall in their places.
No, that's good perspective. And, the licensure, as I've reviewed this, provides for oversight of doctors that want to practice in this area, researchers, mm-hmm. Accordingly. And that authority rests with one agency. There's cultivators, and it doesn't, based on my reading, it doesn't go into great detail on the processors or the manufacturers, but I understand that that's contemplated as well. But here's something that caught my eye, and tell me if this was intended. It's interesting to see that the patient element of this, it provides protections for patients, and it was very careful to say whether they were Mexican citizens or not, that they're allowed to possess this material and travel and transport this material, that being their medicine or various forms of cannabis. to me, that's a really interesting thing. And I understand that on a basic level that you want people that have access to their medicine no matter where they go. But I wonder if that language was carefully chosen to open the door for medical cannabis tourism as a thing, because we're seeing that happen all around the world. We're seeing countries that have more flexible laws allow for people from different countries to come in and seek therapies or treatment that they can't in other places. Was that a discussion at all, or has that just happened to be an implication of the language on there?
I think I'm leaning towards the latter. I don't know what Lorena thinks. I think it's, maybe I'm exaggerating, but I don't think that the vision would be on trying to incentivize those benefits. I think the people that drafted the rules are just coming from a place of, let's just comply with the Supreme Court resolution and the 2017 amendments. And by Supreme Court resolution, I mean not the one that is arriving in the recreational use process, but a resolution that was granted in favor of Mara Garfias, the mother of a child who needs access to the plants. So I think they're coming from a place of just granting people access to the plants and the benefits. So I wouldn't think that they have this vision of here's an attractive, consequence that we could have derived from this.
Lorena, do you see that as a possibility, or how do you think that plays out?
I agree with Luis, also because the regulation, it's pretty restrictive, as I mentioned before. For example, the only two categories of products available to import, export, commercialize are medical pharmaceuticals and herbal medicine. Both of them need clinical research, phase 1, 2, 3, in order to have it on the market. And because they're going to be considered medicine, a real pharmaceutical herbal medicine, the client, the consumer, the patient needs a prescription in order to get it at the pharmacy or the stores that will be allowed to sell this product. So we're not going to see medical cannabis products on the market right away, number one. Number two, the government, by doing this type of regulation, they are focusing on really having the research done on a specific conditions, which I think it's a good thing. Definitely not so open. We're not going to see the medical cannabis industry like you see it in the United States or Canada, because again, these restrictions on the clinical research. But it also, it's a big opportunity, too many companies even outside of Mexico that have been wanting to do clinical research on their products, that already have pharmaceutical formulas that they haven't been able to study or apply in society or patients. That opens up an opportunity for them to come here and do that part, the research and the development for pharmaceuticals. But I don't think it's going in the direction of, having these type of products for the tourism, purposes. We know that we have a huge medical tourism in Mexico, but in order to see that, we're going to have to wait to have those products ready on the market. So we can definitely see a more flexible and a more of an open discussion right now in the Congress for not only the recreational regulation and the industrial hemp, but to open up more the medical cannabis industry, because it's so restrictive. We don't have access to products right now. The patients need immediate access for medical cannabis products. That's the purpose of pushing this type of regulations, right? And right now, we couldn't accomplish that through these regulations. So definitely, the discussion now in the Congress is also to open up a little bit more of this medical cannabis regulation, have immediate access to products. It doesn't matter if it's not considered a pharmaceutical product yet, but at least dietary supplements or herbal remedies. It's a big thing in Mexico as a herbal remedy. You don't need clinical studies. You only need information on the different herbs or plants that you're going to be using, including cannabis. So that definitely will give more access to the patients. I know there are certain groups right now doing the lobbying in the health ministry to help implement another program, like a side program for patients, because this regulation is just not helping them right now. And they are pretty upset about it. And they have the reasons, right? It's a matter of really helping people, especially now during this health crisis, economic crisis that we know around the world, but specifically in Mexico, if you're regulating something for medical purposes, you know, there you have the hope, you know, this family have the hope of have something right away, which is not happening.
Well, those are excellent points, Lorena. And Bob, I want to get your perspective on something that Lorena mentioned, which is this opportunity for American medical marijuana product manufacturers to look at submitting their products into these clinical trials in Mexico, or just exporting product to Mexico, because as Lorena just said, right now creating that supply chain in Mexico to get medical products to patients is likely going to be a long process. So do you see American manufacturers jumping in on this opportunity right now?
Well, obviously we're dealing with a scheduling issue here in the United States, right? Can you export for example, a high THC oil from the United States, given our Controlled Substances Act? And the only way to do that legally, I'm not saying it can't happen, but I presume the importing country is going to require proof of legality, so forth and so on. That's pretty standard international commerce stuff. As you look at that, the only way to lawfully export a high THC product is to have some sort of DEA registration. And the only people with DEA registrations on a somewhat limited list that would qualify here are not necessarily producers of high quality API pharmaceutical grade THC oils. So I look at a country like France. What France did recently was they said, we're starting a medical marijuana program. We want to do a pilot for a couple of years. We don't have any way to get a certain quality or a certain grade of THC oil. So we need people to give it to us for free. And by the way, wink, wink, if you give it to us for free now, you'll be at the front of the line when we start to issue commercial licenses in a couple of years. So and I've subsequently followed up with people that are in the know regarding what's happening in France. And of course, Mexico and France, it's not exactly apples to apples, but there's a lesson in here about where do you start your program? The submittals to the French program, barely any of them met the standard for high quality and consistency and pharma grade material. They closed their RFP, their request for proposals, but it remains open so that they can solicit people that actually can supply that. That doesn't mean there's not suppliers of material in the world right now that can supply the material. But the question is, how long are they willing to go before they make some money on those products, and can they meet the specifications? So the importing of those materials would be the first step, and then of course the trials, these guys alluded to. And Eric, thinking about this thing though, and both Lorena and Luis, I'd love your take on this. And let's not get too in the weeds on it, but what occurs to me, what's really interesting to me as a lawyer in large part, is that the Mexican Supreme Court, as it relates to medical cannabis and non-medical cannabis, issued mandates, and those mandates carried deadlines. So the Mexican Supreme Court said, legislature, you have to enact law that does this by a certain date. That's not allowed in the United States. What we have under our Constitution is the separation of powers, but it's even more nuanced than that. The judicial branch, the courts, cannot tell the legislature to make a law. They can strike down a law that the legislature has passed, or strike parts of it because it's not constitutional or not compliant with the law, but they can't say, legislature, you have to do something, or let alone do it by a certain date. So that's fascinating to me, that just from a legal standpoint, that this court can tell the legislature to do something, and the legislature has to act within a period of time. And of course, that's been a little bit more flexible given the hard work that's gone into it and COVID. But Luis, maybe you could start just, you know, how is that possible without getting into some, you know, long in the weeds dissertation that only you and I would appreciate?
Yeah, well, it's a really good point, because if you want to have like a clear full picture of how things have worked out up until this point, it's not really that the Supreme Court is ordering the legislative, you know, it just occurred to them that they should legalize, that you should issue a new law, a complete new instrument. This comes from a series of resolutions that once they reach the number of five with the same direction and reasoning, it became jurisprudence. So what those resolutions did was that they declared that the prohibition, the ban on recreational use, is unconstitutional, and they granted the plaintiffs, individuals, the right this resolution saying, you know, it's unconstitutional. So these provisions that are, you know, three or four provisions that are in the Mexican health law, they have to be changed. So the legislative power, they could really just comply with this mandate by just deleting or amending those two or three or four provisions instead of just, you know, issuing a new law. So that's one leg. The other leg is just the initiative that the new president has to, you know, end the war on drugs, recognize the prohibition failed, etc. So it's not just an isolated, you know, occurrence or idea from the Supreme Court. The legislative could do just an amendment with respect to a few provisions that are deemed unconstitutional, but it also comes from the initiative of, you know, introducing a bill.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Luis. And it is really fascinating just to think about the differences there. But there is something I want to make sure that we get both Luis and Lorena's comments on before we let you go today. And that is just for our listeners, if you would kind of give us a sense of where the other reform measures on the recreational side, the adult use marijuana or adult use cannabis side, and then the industrial hemp. We know that there is an upcoming election this summer in Mexico, and we're hopeful, at least from my understanding of what Bob has relayed on the subject, that we want to see those reform measures advance prior to when everybody kind of goes into campaigning mode for the upcoming election. So I guess, Luis, I'll put it to you first. Do these medical cannabis regulations coming down bode well for seeing these other reform measures move forward in the next couple of months? And just give us a sense of what we can expect or what we should be hopeful for with respect to those over the next 3 or 4 months.
Yes, I think it should bode well. We're hoping that the momentum that was generated last November, and that momentum was generated because of the political parties reaching the consensus to get this through, at least at the Senate level, hopefully that can permeate to the lower house. And the lower house is also controlled by the same majority party that controls the Senate. So we're hoping that that can be followed through. There's a chance that some changes may be done in this bill. And I think that I'll leave Lorena to tell us what her experience has been, because I know she's there a few times a week, so she can have a better sense of that. But I'm hoping that can change. And also, I mean, there's in this assessment or forecast, one thing is just the political environment, how we feel things are going to move forward. But also, it's important to always keep in mind that just like Secretary of Health had to comply with a Supreme Court resolution by November 12th, they also the Congress has to comply with this deadline set now by April 30th. We've seen, unfortunately, that, you know, extensions are available and, you know, things can happen. But I still want to be optimistic that starting on the new legislative period in February, we'll see the leading deputies speak up on the topic and get it to move forward.
Yeah, I can just add something to that. That's definitely the way we see this moving forward. And there's as Luis mentioned, there's a deadline of April 30th. And in the middle of March, we know that the deputies will ask for a license. That's how we call it, for a license for the re-election or to go into other type of elections as for governments, to be the governor of their state or any other political positions that they might seeking for. So that this is also something that could slow down the process. That's why we're trying to make sure that this voting happens before the middle of March. Even though the deadline is the end of April. And we also know if they not do the right modifications and vote this law before the deadline, it's going to be really hard to approve it in the next legislative session, which starts in September, because then we're going to have new legislators, we're going to have new deputies, and that definitely will slow down even more the whole process. But we are staying really positive that this is going to happen, just because, as Luis was mentioning, there's this momentum, you know, that the Senate is bringing after the voting in November. And the modifications, just in general, what we see that might be modified in this proposed bill in the Chamber of Deputies, we're trying for them to change the prohibition on exportation. For example, we want to see exportation of cannabis, psychoactive and non-psychoactive. We also want to reclassify the cannabinoids, so there's more flexibility in terms of access for medical cannabis products, as I mentioned before, because there are definitions that are definitely wrong right now in the general health law. So that needs to be changed. And this is the opportunity to do so with the Chamber of Deputies. Another modification that we're suggesting is to give a higher percentage of the licenses for the indigenous communities. Right now it's at 40%. We're asking for at least 60% of the licenses for them. Also to lower the fees, the multas. Luis, help me with this word. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the fines, administrative fines. Yeah.
The administrative fines, to lower those, because they are still criminalizing the consumer. Meaning that if I have more than 28 grams in my possession, but less than 200 grams, I get an administrative fee, which is really high for Mexico. And also some time in jail, from 24 to 36 hours. So that's still criminalizing the consumer. And we have to understand that the consumer, it's the patient and it's the client for all these companies, you know, out there trying to sell something or establish a dispensary. So we need to start with this is a priority. This is basic. We need to move those high fines and stop criminalizing the consumer. And that's one of the main points that we're trying to modify in this proposed bill, as well as other details, you know, such as the amount of land where you can grow for outdoor, for example. It's limited to 1 hectare if you want to grow marijuana outdoors, which is not enough space, you know, if we want to have a big production. Or, for example, there's not a clear definition of industrial hemp. And we're trying to just move industrial hemp out of this regulation so we can just have a normal permit as if you want to grow corn or any other produce. So that's just a summary of some of the modifications that we're going to be seeing happening in the discussion of the Chamber of Deputies. But definitely it depends a lot on on the nonprofits and the groups that are doing loving ourselves, and also to help build a social base, you know, educate society and the masses. It always comes down to education, educating our legislators, and making sure that society in general approves this. Because at the end of the day, that's the politics that our new government, our new president is trying to implement and leading towards what people want, right? So if we don't educate our people and the president says, let's have a survey and see who wants this and who doesn't, you know, we might lose. So that's why it's so important to keep this education. But we definitely see a lot of will in the Chamber of Deputies. They are very excited on continuing moving forward. But again, it just comes down to the education that we can provide.
Well, it's a wonderful summary, Lorena. And we are so grateful for both of you, Luis and Lorena, for coming on to the Hoban Minute and shedding light and giving us perspective on how these issues are unfolding, because they are really, really exciting. And we can't wait to check in with you again and have you on again on the Hoban Minute, hopefully here in the next couple of months, to hear about these reform measures. And we are staying positive as well that they will advance here in the next couple of months. So you both have a wonderful evening, and thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Nice talking to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law, and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.